Hello, welcome to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham, and we're thinking about buying a foam finger in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, cup fever can wait as we get on with the very real business of Premier League survival as we welcome Southampton to the Amex today. Just one place and 3 points separate us ahead of today's clash, and so it's a chance to create some daylight and a 6-point cushion ahead of our trip to Chelsea on Wednesday. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and on this week's show we will also hear from the Saints pod, the ugly inside. We'll also chat to a man who walked out at Wembley wearing a Chewit wrapper, and he was also a Maltese international, Gary Chivers. And in the studio with us here right now, we're delighted to welcome back a man who has recently been referred to as a boffin, a brain box, an egghead.
Or as a we what? Like,
egghead.
Thank you.
Or as we like to call him,
Kieran Maguire.
Afternoon, chaps.
Hello,
hello Kieran. How are you?
Which is your favourite of those? I mean, you've been
or called. Can, a, or do you have one of your own that's another noun that by which you prefer to be known?
I'm quite happy to be known as the boffin of football finance.
I mean, being called a boffin in the Daily Star isn't exactly a high grade, is it? But I mean, you've been in the broadsheets as well, haven't you? What do they call you?
They tend to be a football finance expert or specialist or something of that nature.
Yeah, that level of praise is something like a C plus at Bash Street.
But you've been a busy boy, and I mean, I hate to say it, really.
Well,
but
I think we've all been busy, but Kieran more so than others, because he's so much more on the telly and the radio, isn't he?
Well, there is that, but I mean, to be honest, when someone hears you talking about their club, it's usually bad news.
Unfortunately, it has been bad news the last week or so. I was commissioned by BBC Sport to write an article on the Championship clubs and League One clubs, beginning with the letter B. So it was Blackburn, Bolton and Birmingham, all of whom have been in the news recently. And the news was fairly mixed for those clubs.
I mean, it's a clubs in crisis thing again. I mean, how are we still talking about clubs in crisis? I mean, 20-odd years after we were in crisis, it shouldn't still be happening.
It's been like it since the year dot, hasn't it? Ever since, you know, sort of your local businessman made good comes in with the ego. But, you know, if we didn't have that in football, you wouldn't have a job, really, would you?
No, and in an ideal world, I shouldn't have a job. Football all should be about talking tactics, discussing goals, saves, tackles, controversial moments, and calling Mike Dean rude names. but instead, we've got this sort of sideline that has been created because of the monetization of the game, and also the fact that football players are now commodities rather than, you know, sons and fathers and brothers.
Absolutely. So, I mean, out of those clubs beginning with B, it seems that Bolton is probably the one that is in worst dire straits at the moment.
Bolton are in a terrible position. The wages were due to be paid yesterday. I've not seen what's happened overnight. The person who is selling the club, he historically has had problems. He was barred from being a director here in the UK for 8 years. And the person that he's selling it to, certainly the person in the frame for taking over, is somebody who was prevented from buying other clubs. So there's a lot of concern for what's going to happen for the future of Bolton Wanderers, which is a club which has got amazing history and heritage and is a pillar of the community.
Well, it is, exactly, and this is the whole point. I mean, these people who think they can like use these football clubs as playthings, they do not get the whole concept.
But twas ever thus, though, mate. I mean, look at sort of like the nonsense we had Bill Archer took over as a plaything. I mean, it was again as a commodity. It's not a new thing. I mean, yes, players are commodities, but with the amount of money you say about the monetization of football, but the sort of like the bad governance surrounding the ownership of football clubs has been going since the year dot, hasn't it?
Yes, it has, and we've got three governing authorities in the English Football League, the FA, and the Premier League. I mean, the Premier League and the EFL are effectively members' clubs, so they're not going to vote for things necessarily, which is going to improve the quality of the game's governance. But the Football Association is supposed to be the umbrella organisation, and it simply doesn't want to know at present, and that's very disappointing.
I've got to say this, but at least there's one club that you don't have to write about, hopefully, too much more. I mean, you know, again, I assume that you've been actually looking at this from afar, but sort of Blackpool seem to have turned the corner now, don't they?
Blackpool, it's very good. We now have professional managers there. One of the first things that they did was to remove Owen Oyston from his position as a director, so he's in no longer in a position to influence the activities there. There's still a potential problem that the club could be sanctioned by the Football League if it ends up going into administration. Presently, it's the parent companies which are in administration, and there is the possibility of a 12-point fine. I think both parties are talking to each other. To be fair to the EFL, I think they're going to take a sympathetic response, but the trouble is, given the nature of football tribalism and whataboutery, you will get other clubs saying, well, if it happened to us, why shouldn't it happen to Blackpool?
Sure. You know what, I don't think the Blackpool fans would be too upset about it. I mean, they're not in any real relegation trouble anyway.
In terms of their priorities, then yes, obviously, yeah, getting the club back from someone who, you know, again, the sort of like the Archer type thing of not someone who's got a vested interest in the being, you know, a beneficiary of the club, you know, that's going to benefit the club. But if they can do it, if the Football League, and let's face it, I think that the Football League has a certain level of culpability in this, in as much as they could have stopped this happening a long, long time ago. I mean, when a set of fans boycotts its own club for, you know, and we had Christine said in the chair of the Blackpool Supporters Trust, she'd boycotted a home game for 4 years. I would be appalled if I had to boycott an Albion game for 4 years because of X, Y, and Z. We voted to boycott one game. They've voted to boycott 4 years.
Let's face it, it takes an awful lot of willpower to do just one. I mean, it is
absolutely
ridiculous. But I mean, the things at that club have moved on quite swiftly. In fact, I think that this is how swiftly they moved on. And I was actually mortified by this week. I saw they were having, I think it was the Tangerine Knights, they were having a Twitter poll about whether they should have goal music or not, and I'm like, vote.
Well, quite. I mean,
I voted for it.
In All the President's Men, they refer to it as another name, which we can't repeat on air, but I think the polite way of saying it is called ballot stuffing, so they called it a different thing in that film.
Well, okay, but let's move on to the Albion then, and Kieran, it's been a good few weeks. Obviously, we've got the FA Cup semi-final coming up. We're all very, very excited about that. But it's not as important as today, is it?
No, today is a massive match. I think if we do get 3 points today, then I think everybody can heave a sigh of relief and can focus on what's going to happen next weekend. And also, it means that effectively Chelsea becomes a free hit. Mm. So that with that in mind, I'm hoping that your hearts and minds are focused today. It's too easy to be distracted by the giddiness of an FA Cup semi-final. Mm. I can assure you, back in Manchester, it's not being taken that seriously. I've got plenty of friends who support City. I think they're struggling to sell their ticket allocation.
They've only sold 18,000 tickets, so they've given some back.
But given the number of times that Manchester City have been at Wembley and the fact that they're down in London on Tuesday night, the following Tuesday night, for a Champions League quarter-final game.
And the kick-off time as well. I mean, it doesn't make it easy. I mean, well, you know. Actually, let's talk about that. What actually did happen to you after the Millwall game? Because
that was a 2 o'clock kick-off.
That was a 2 o'clock kick-off. Now, I was speaking to Kieran before the game.
Let Kieran tell the story then.
And Kieran was telling me, I've got everything planned. I've got the train booked back. I've allowed for extra time in penalties just in case. Now, you were still in the pub about after that train was meant to have gone. So what happened?
Well, it's not very often. I mean, I've watched the Albion for, 40, 45 years, and it's not too often we've been 2-0 down in the 88th minute, and we go on to be victorious. So I think under those circumstances, all bets are off.
And obviously, you're actually teetotal. So what did you actually celebrate with?
I celebrated with lime and soda, which is my standard drink.
Fair enough.
It's rock and roll. Okay, so, I mean, going back into the Albion there, I mean, obviously, so we've got this game, we've got Chelsea coming up on Tuesday, and you said, yeah, I mean, it could be a free hit. But Chelsea, they're a funny old side at the moment, and I don't think we've...
You're not impressed with them. You think that actually Chelsea are a bit of a rollover, don't you?
They'd lost 4-0 away at Bournemouth. I mean,
yeah, but freak results do happen.
Well, they lost 6-0 away at Man City as well.
Yeah, but to be honest, everyone loses. Everyone's got the, you know...
They recently lost to Everton. I mean, they're on the road. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if actually Cardiff gets something against them tomorrow.
I think the shield of invincibility that some clubs have had historically doesn't exist at present with Chelsea. I think when we go to play City next weekend, there's an expectation of defeat. And yeah, that's fairly standard. I think if you go to Anfield these days, some clubs have built up a very strong home position. Chelsea on their day will beat the Albion. Their day is not as frequent as it used to be. And also they do have distractions in terms of the ownership of the club, the management of the club, and the future in terms of where they're going to be playing their football.
And Europe as well, and they're silly, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is one of the... I mean, again, I know you keep saying let's focus on today, but we're looking at Man City next week. They're going to be far more focused on the Champions League. Now, it's Spurs, and they know they're beatable. But the point is that, you know, I suspect our main hope for next week is the fact that they're actually going to take this game too lightly. One, because it's only, you know, hashtag teams like Brighton. And secondly, because the Champions League is so much more important to them. They have probably a point to prove to their fans. If they're going to be a genuine world contender, you know, they've got to the semi-final, they've never got to the final of the Champions League, they are going to need to prove themselves. So the Spurs one is what they're going to focus on. That, I think, is probably our best hope for next week. But if you're talking about this week, like I say, with Chelsea, who themselves have, you know, let's face it, their season is all but over, you know, except for Europe. So that is now they're going to be their main focus. They're, all right, they want to get there for top four space. And again, we'll see Brighton as a, you know, Brighton at home as a little bit of a relative pushover. I can't help feeling, though, that the problem we're going to have when we play Chelsea, and this is only a massive assumption that we beat Southampton, is that we're going to take the game a bit lightly because there's going to be so many people focused on Saturday, and that includes the players.
Well, this is it,
who
Kieran.
Will want to play.
This is it, Kieran. I was talking to Graham Mosley last week, and he was saying that, of course, they were focused on the games they had to play in the league, but he said subconsciously, you're trying not to get injured, you are thinking about that big game
coming
up.
You'll pull out that tackle, won't you? You won't give yourself 100%, you know.
But do you think, I mean, looking at the... We are excited about this game at Wembley, aren't we? Let's not beat about it. And it is quite difficult to think about, like this El Clásico, as they were trying to call it on the...
Oh, it's not another derby, is it? Not another M27 derby, is it?
Oh, of course it is.
Oh, dear.
It is. But, I mean, it's when you're looking at that and you're thinking of that Man City, they've got arguably the best player in Europe at the moment in Raheem Sterling. And I'm petrified by him. But, I mean, Graham was saying that they were playing within themselves. They were trying not to get injured in those games. And they did actually end up getting relegated. So...
I was there at the Goldstone when we were relegated, and it was a pretty grim performance on the day. And I must say, confess, at the time I thought we'd never get back into the top flight. So it was evident in the performances, especially sort of the last two or three away games as well. I remember we played Notts County and Birmingham over an Easter weekend, and we picked up 1 point. But we're in the FA Cup final, and nobody seemed to care that much, and I wouldn't want that mentality to creep into the Albion today.
I've got a feeling that there's the Notts County game. Was that the one where Steve Foster was trying so hard to get sent off because of the rules they had about suspensions at the time?
That's right. He was booked early on in the by the referee, and then halfway through the second half, when he'd clearly been told at half time, at this rate, Steve, you're going to miss the final. A ball came through over his head, and he jumped up and caught it like a basketball player, with a player running through. And the referee had clearly worked out that Foster was trying to get a deliberate second yellow card and refused to give him one.
if only there was a parallel of that recently with a certain Real Madrid player. Yeah. But it was. Do you think that with the current squad, though? I mean, there's not actually that many English, British players in the squad. I mean, and people say the FA Cup's dead, don't they? But I mean, the amount of tickets we sold and the excitement is generated has certainly dispelled that myth. But do you think for the foreign players in our squad, it means as much as it does to someone like Lewis Dunk?
I do, actually, because the FA Cup is broadcast all over the world. Lots of people have grown up with it wherever they've come from. And from a player's perspective, ultimately, that when they look upon their career as and in their retirement, they want to say, well, what were the main achievements? And you will look upon winning an FA Cup semi-final with greater fondness than beating Southampton the previous week, because it is a standout performance. You are going to Wembley. You are being led out by the manager. You will have your friends and family. And you will know that all of your relatives over the whole planet will be watching you for that 90 minutes. So I think from a professional point of view, there's a hell of a sense of achievement in getting as far as we have done.
But with that in mind, what's your take on whether semi-final should be at Wembley?
No, it's been done purely for financial reasons, and I think that's wrong.
Well, for Wembley's reasons, isn't it?
For the Football Association. Right. The Football Association, in building Wembley, vastly overspent. And the cost of Wembley was around about £700 million. And the only way that they can get that back is by hosting as many matches as possible. In an ideal world, it is kept back for the final, in the sense of being that peak of a career. Semi-finals aren't the same. I can understand the logic of having the FA Trophy there, of having the playoff finals there, because it is useful to have somewhere which has that capacity. But we've got 60,000 capacity stadia dotted around the country now. We've got places in Manchester. Liverpool holds 54. There's lots of other places where the matches could be held.
Well, I mean, this would probably be at Villa Park, wouldn't it? I suppose the Watford.
Villa Park isn't big enough these days, and that's only about 42,000, isn't it, these days? I mean, there's Wembley, there's the Emirates, there's now the Spurs ground. They are 60,000 stadia plus. A push, you've got Twickenham, although I don't think it'll be allowed to use it. London Stadium, I don't think is big enough.
Spurs Stadium?
That's what I just said, yeah. And then up north, you've got, let's say, Anfield at 54, you've got Old Trafford at 76. Yeah, I mean, now there isn't, in the middle of the country, a decent enough stadium, you know, unless you had kind of two inverted commas. If you had Crystal Palace against a third division side, then I think Villa Park is plenty. But above and beyond that,
I thought Crystal Palace were a third division side.
Well, a third rate side. But the issue is that where you had Villa Park, you'd have had Hillsborough, you'd had Old Trafford and what have you. There isn't that same. The geographical split is London and the North West, and largely that's it, isn't it?
Now, Kieran, I mean, obviously with your financial head on,
again.
Now, with years ago, having a cup run was really, really beneficial to the coffers. But and it's with the Premier League money and the TV money, probably not so much these days. But how much can the club have looked to have made from this cup run?
Well, if you win the FA Cup, you get £4 million in prize money. And that's the equivalent of being two places higher or lower in the Premier League itself. So it's not a significant in terms of prize money, but then clearly you will have the increased attendances for the matches in getting to the final. There's the opportunity to negotiate bonuses with sponsors and commercial partners, and there's a chance for increased merchandise sales. So for a club the size of the Albion, yeah, the Albion's got a turnover of what, £130-140 million. I guess we'd be looking at sort of around 6 or 7 million as an increase. That it can be given to Chris to invest in the playing budget in the form of either wages or transfers. So it's certainly more significant for the Albion than it is for City. If City win the Champions League, we're talking about 80 million bonus for them.
So if you're talking about 4 million as prize money, does that include things like, you know, the 45% you get as part of the you know, match attendance and figures, or is that just pure prize money?
That's pure prize money from the FA itself. So the way that the attendance money is split is it goes 45-45 between the two clubs after deducting expenses, and 10 goes into the pool.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's crazy, really. I mean, when you think that,
well, this is why when a smaller club draws Manchester United in the competition, bearing in mind that Manchester United will always sell out, even if they're selling the tickets for only £15, they're selling 76,000 tickets at £15. 45% of that is a massive thing for the smaller club. They might get beaten out of sight. But, you know, this is the nature of the sort of like the arbitrary way that money is distributed, where it's so top heavy. This is why we wanted to sort of get our noses in the trough. You can't actually blame us for doing that. But it still means that there are clubs, you know, even the second tier, who are going to be who do scrabble around. And we go to Worthing quite a lot. And if they, you know, once upon a time, Worthing would have got to the first or second round in the FA Cup. Whitehawk very nearly made it to Everton. Think of what that would have done for Whitehawk. Well, even if they'd have been beaten out of sight by Everton.
Lewis at Stoke, and never Stoke were in the Premier League recently.
Well, Lewis were able to build that terracing behind the goal on the back of playing Stoke City in the FA Cup. You know, who knows, you know, Whitehall might have actually ended up with a decent pitch after if they'd have got past whoever it was they were playing to get to play Everton. You know, a pitch that you don't need cramp horns to get to the other end.
But, well, that's a nice little segue there, because what were you talking about? Worthing and Lewis and things like that. There's a big game coming up. And now, Kieran, you recently played in such a match. Can you tell us about your RIMF experience?
It was the most amazing footballing experience of my life from a playing point of view. To be in a changing room with Peter Ward and Gary Nelson and players of that ilk, to be up against Andy Johnson. I only played for the last 10 minutes. I knew I was giving up football immediately afterwards.
It was the brilliant end of a superb, illustrious career.
You were brilliant when you came on in that game, though. You're absolutely brilliant.
I was terrified of letting the side down.
You left it all out there, didn't you? Quite literally.
So what's it like actually playing out on that pitch?
Having grown up at playing various places in Brighton, it's the pitch is like no other because it's so true. Mm. So you're not having to deal with ruts. You're not having to deal with imaginary lines where there should be lines on the pitch.
Jumpers being put down for goalposts.
That's right. It was superb. It's huge. The Amex pitch as well. You grow up on park football where from the point of view of the council, they're trying to cram as many pitches into as small a space as possible to maximise their money take. But the Amex was just sensational, and it's something that will live with me forevermore.
Brilliant. And it was in front of, and I do know this for a fact, it was in front of 1,000 people, which doesn't sound much at the Amex, but they can still make a noise in that West Stand lower. I was so tempted to read out the attendance that day, because I had the PA thing of and the attendance is 29,000. And I saw Barbara over there. I'm thinking, I better not. He'll think I'm taking the mic. But yes, this year's game is happening. We've got a new venue. Again, we're going to be moving to Woodside Road in Worthing, which has got a relatively true pitch. It's not the same as the Bobbly Moon that they have at the Dripping Pan. So it's Woodside Road, Worthing, on Friday the 26th of April, 7:45 kickoff, Brighton against Palace. As Brett Mendoza has already tweeted, we have a perfect record so far. The men's team did the double over them. The women's team tonked them 5-1. So this would actually make it a grand slam, and let's face it, it's the big one. So yes, do come along. It's £5 to come on to come in. Kids are £2, but free if accompanied by an adult. Friday 26th of April, Woodside Road, the 18th annual Robert Eaton Memorial Fund Challenge match between Brighton fans and Palace fans.
And these games are always good fun, aren't
you
they?
Just go along to get drunk, don't you?
And maybe but there might be a few special guests here as well.
Well, one would hope so, but watch this space.
But I know certainly one person who might be there, but we'll
probably not. Are we talking about a fellow who looks like a pirate?
No.
Okay, in that case, I do not know this, so you'll have to tell me afterwards.
I'll tell you off there.
Please do.
Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. Have you got a smart speaker? Why don't you try asking it to play Radio Reverb?
Alexa, play Radio Reverb.
I'm sorry, I do not recognise that.
Actually, we've had so many arguments at work over Alexa, especially telling her to belt up.
Well, you know what else you can ask Alexa now?
Go on.
Alexa, play the Albion Roar Spotify playlist.
I have already asked for that, and it doesn't recognise it, so we've got to try harder.
It will work.
But okay, fine.
And in case you hadn't noticed, we've now got a Spotify playlist. We've been asked by a few people.
Including you, Sarah. Hello, yeah. Sarah.
Because we try and be as eclectic as possible with the songs we close the show with. And there's been a few that Kieran's like I had before, like This Charming Man and all sorts of...
Well, I think he's chosen this one today. We'll obviously, you'll find out at the end of the show, but Kieran was the one who suggested the outro today, so... Anyway,
he didn't. It kind of
well, whatever.
It was a democratic decision, but
two anyway. Against one, in other words, yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Move on to shirt of the week.
Okay, so yeah, we've brought to you an association with the fabulous oldfootballshirts.com. It must be getting towards 100,000 on there now.
Not far short of it.
And
he's going to do a big countdown on that, by the way.
Is he?
He is.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Well, I'm just going to pass this over to Kieran to describe for me. It's quite blue.
Oh, it's not the Chewits wrapper. Thank you.
Well, this is a mainly blue shirt with a little bit of white piping and a big sponsors logo in the centre. And CFC splattered across. So I presume this is Chelsea connected or sort of tenuously.
Or a fridge maker and the gas that used to destroy the ozone layer.
That's right. Yeah. I've got absolutely no idea. It looks South American. Here's my gut. It's made by Diadora. So that's about as far as they go.
As regards to the CFC bit, it's part of the badge.
Could it be Corinthians? Could it be Brazil?
You see a big badge that looks like the Bacardi logo without the bat on it. I'm going to say someone.
Do we like the shirt? I mean, it's quite Man City-ish, isn't it? In feel.
There's a touch of that. But the M's missing.
Have you seen the new Man City shirt? They've done a mock-up of all the last 10 shirts, and it's a mess.
Well, thanks for that.
It's an absolute mess.
In short, we have no idea what this is.
Okay, well, this is the 2001 to 2002 home shirt of German side Chemnitzer, and they are based in Chemnitz in Saxony, and they play in the Regionale Nordost, which is one of the regions which makes up the fourth tier in German football. Home is the Stadion der Gerstrasse, which accommodates 16,000.
He's fluent in French, isn't he?
16,061 versed munching Saxonists.
Did he really just say that?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
They're originally formed by a bunch of students in 1899, and they're originally named Chemnitzer SC Britannia, and in 1903 they became the founding members of the Verband Chemnitzer Fußballverein, which was then included into the Verband Mitteldeutscher Fußballverein Federation. I'm struggling here. Of Central Germany 2 years later. After the war, he says, it's got to be said in Uncle Albert voice, after the war, they climbed the ranks and in 1962 made it to the DDR Oberliga, which is the top flight of football in East Germany. Since unification, they began in the Bundesliga 2 before a period of decline, which basically sees them hovering between the third and fourth levels. Sadly, the club has recently been plagued with controversy, with the players and fans holding a minute's silence after a local far-right activist, Thomas Haller, passed away earlier this month, with some players even sporting T-shirts honouring the local hooligan group founded by Haller, which is the Hunara. Sparkasse commits, the regional bank, have now withdrawn their shirt sponsorship, and the chief executive has resigned from the club. No doubt UEFA will follow that up with no further punishment. As for UK links, Michael Ballack began his career in 1995 with Chemnitzer, and Matty Ryan's dad had a trial with Chemnitzer Sabretooths, the local ice hockey team.
No, he didn't. How many Australians play ice hockey? They don't have ice in Australia, do they?
Yeah, they
probably not.
They have ice rinks.
I'm sure they have ice rinks, yeah, but okay. I do love his little faux pas at the end there.
Yeah, I know. I should probably read that when I'm not ill, I'd imagine.
I think you'd probably read it through before you come on air as well. But that was a real trip up there. Phil,
was.
Please in English. Please in English. I know Adi will trip up on that, but please in English, Phil.
It was. I like the shirt anyway.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Okay. On that note, earlier today I caught up with an Albion legend. I'm now delighted to be joined by Gary Chivers. Now, Gary, last time you were on the show, we made jingles for you. Do you remember?
Do you know what? It's been that long. I can't quite collect. You'll have to refresh my memory.
Well, the show is actually still in the Albion Raw archive. It was on the 5th of October 2013. We were playing Forest at the Amex and we lost 3-1. So hopefully it's not going to be a repeat performance of that today. But it's a massive week coming up for the Albion, Gary. We've got Southampton at the Amex today, a trip to your other old lot, Chelsea, on Wednesday, then of course the FA Cup semi-final. So it's important that we don't take our eyes off the ball and we just concentrate on today's game, isn't it?
It's very important. We don't want to go down the same street like we did in 1983, where, you know, we got to the FA Cup final, and of course got relegated. We need to keep and consolidate our position in the Premiership.
Yeah, what have you made of the team this season, Gary? Because, I mean, it's been flattering to the season, sometimes it's been really good. We just need a bit more consistency, really, don't we?
Yeah, we need a bit more consistency. I think of late. Listen, if you look at our goalkeeper's been fantastic. The two centre halves have been absolutely unbelievable, and we've got some great results at times. So then, when you look at some of the games we possibly lost, you think, well, we might have got somebody get out of that game, you know. And like you just said, it's a little bit more about consistency, but it's a little bit more, I think, sometimes in having a bit more belief in ourselves.
Yeah, because I mean, we're going into today's game. We're 3 points away from Southampton and 1 place above them. That could have been so much different if we hadn't thrown away that lead at Fulham and we hadn't thrown away that lead at West Ham.
Yeah, I mean, there were two games there where you thought, you know, the positions we were in, we're going to win the games easy. But you can never rest in this Premiership. You know, you take your eye off the ball for a couple of seconds. It's not like being in the Championship. They score goals. Their forward scores goals and they don't miss.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? You did one chance. That's all it takes, isn't it, in this league?
Yeah, but it was unfortunate. It was unfortunate in both end games. We just took our eye off the ball a little bit, I think, in both games.
Yeah, and you could argue the same. Actually, the performance at Leicester was one of the best of the season, but obviously we came away with nothing. So, and the league, we could have been going into this game a lot more comfortable and obviously looking forward to going to Chelsea. Now, obviously going to Chelsea on Wednesday... you see a lot more Chelsea than we do. They're flattering to deceive a little bit at the moment, aren't they?
Well, they've been found out a little bit in the way they play, the style of play. And I'm not too sure if it was inexperience with the manager, but when the manager first came to Chelsea, he turned around and told everyone that he's going to play with a flat back four. He's not going to play with a five. So he sort of like told everyone how they're going to play, and the way they play is they pass everything through Jorginho.
Yeah, and if you stop Jorginho, you stop the team.
Yeah, you stop the side. And what's been happening of late and for the last couple of months, the centre-forward comes back and picks up Jorginho. So, to be quite honest, it's not even another midfield player. You can't, don't think anyone knows what Sarri ball is.
Is it something? It sounds like something you might play on the beach wearing a sarong or something. I mean, I don't know.
I don't think anyone knows what it is. It keeps on about saying about, you know, it's all about keeping the ball, obviously, and teams want to keep the ball. But Sarri ball, seriously, I've asked loads of people, and it's all about keeping possession of the ball. But sometimes, you know, sometimes it's the only team I've ever seen that take a goal kick sometimes.
Yeah.
And they pass it actually backwards from a goal kick. And the two centre halves go on the byline. I mean, it's
odd. It's very odd, especially when you consider that, I mean, in the last week, we've had the international break. We've seen England scored 10 goals this week. We've seen Hudson-Odoi make his full international debut before he's even started a game for Chelsea. You had Ross Barkley scored twice for England this week as well. You've also seen Olivier Giroud score twice, go third in the all-time French scoring list. And these guys are people that can't get a game.
No, it's I feel for Hudson-Odoi, but he's young to have that sort of price tag put on his head for someone so young. That's quite overwhelming, to be quite honest here, because he's got a long, long, long way to go before you get the finished article, and I think he's far from that at this present moment in time.
So when you see the likes of Jadon Sancho go abroad to Dortmund and be a massive success, and you saw Bayern Munich were after Hudson-Odoi as well, and Chelsea haven't let him go. I mean, is this the career progression for these guys now, because they're not going to get a chance? But although maybe with this possible transfer ban that Chelsea are going to have, that could give them a window.
It could give them a window, but you've got to you have to say that Premiership for me is the best league in the world. It's far better than Bundesliga, and I think the tendencies show that. And when you watch how how good the football is in this Premiership. It's a wonderful, wonderful league. So they're playing in the top, they're playing at the top level in the top division, I think, in the world when you're playing in the Premiership. Mm.
But okay, well, so do you give us any hope at all on Wednesday? I mean, there's not been great shakes away from home. Obviously, shipping four at Bournemouth and away at Cardiff today. So you could do us tomorrow, so you could do us a favour by winning that one there. But obviously, us going to Stamford Bridge, we haven't had a great record against the top six. So I mean, have we got a hope?
Do you know what? I think there comes a time when you're. When we're just, we need 7 points, basically. We need 7 points to stay up. So we got, I always think if you get to that magic 40, you're staying up, right? So you've got to concentrate, not on the teams that you think, you know, you might be, the teams you think you're going to win against. That's what you've got a chance today. We're at home. The crowd are brilliant at home at the end. It's going to make a lot of noise. If they get beyond this side, this is a great chance for us today. Today to get one of 3 points over our fellow rivals down bottom.
Okay, now of course we've got another big game coming up next weekend, and obviously we're going to Wembley. I mean, we could argue about until we're blue in the face about the rights and wrongs of having the semi-finals at Wembley, but they are at Wembley, and you are in a unique club of being one of, I think it's one of only 24 players to actually play for the Albion at Wembley. We're not including the game at Spurs, like, well, that doesn't count. Last season.
Yeah, well, it's a great way to go to. I love playing it. I love playing for the club, and I love playing at Wembley for the club. Although, you know, we didn't actually perform on the day, but it's a great place to go to. You know, it's a great place to play, and it's one of the highlights in my career is stepping out on that Wembley pitch.
Yeah,
up to 70,000 people, which was brilliant, and the fans screaming at you.
We had Bob Codner on the show a couple of weeks ago, and we asked him what his opinion was the first time he saw that kit. Because, I mean, let's face it, you walked out for Brighton Hove Albion at Wembley and you were wearing a Turek wrapper.
And do you know what? I think, bless him, our kit man.
Jock.
We weren't the best washer in the world. Whether we didn't have enough soap powder or what, but I don't think we started off. It was like a reddish, but when Jock got hold of it turned into a pinkish. Bless him. it just weren't the best kit in the world, you know. Far preferred the blue and white, obviously.
Well, actually, the blue and white version of that kit wasn't many shakes in, because that was the Andy Pandy kit with the striped shorts.
Do you know that cottoned on though for a while, didn't there? There was quite a few teams that looked at our kit and thinking, wow, this is the way we're going to go. But
we certainly didn't.
We look like basketball players, didn't we?
It was hideous. But okay, so I mean, it was so you getting to that Wembley final, it was a hot day. We went into it, we weren't favourites. Notts County were probably favourites that day. And lost 3-1, and the brilliant interview with Dean Wilkins afterwards when he forgot he actually scored in the game, which was good. But I mean, what are your memories of that particular team? Because there are some really big characters in there, and it was probably the last successful Albion team of the Goldstone era. Well,
that was, you know, I looked at our goalkeeper. I think he just Perry Digweed, who was a tremendous keeper. We had some. And if you look down the spine of the team, we had a good spine of the team. We had some very, very good players. Very, very good players. Good footballers as well, who enjoyed playing football. And we liked to play football. But some days we were really, really hot. And some days we were really, really cold. But the football was great. I really enjoyed my football playing with them guys. You know, with the likes of, you had Clive Walker out wide, Robert, who got a few goals for us. Dino, who sat back a little bit. Budgie Byrne was brilliant all year, but unfortunately, I think he came on in the Wembley, you know, and we missed him, really.
Yeah.
Mike Small, tremendous, tremendous player. No one sort of like heard of Mike Small before he came to the Albion, and he came here and smashed it. But there was all great people in the dressing room. You know, they were brilliant to be around. It was such a good time for the club.
Yeah, you also had Gary Nelson in that squad as well, which
we had Gary Nelson. Gary, Yeah, Gary was Gary didn't play a lot that season, you know, because of the likes of and Gary was a good player for us as well, just before Johnny Byrne. But when you're coming to that international, I mean, Johnny Byrne was playing for Era, you know, with some top players. When you get someone like that coming to play for the Albion, it just takes the club on another level.
Yeah, absolutely. But do you think Dean Wilkins got the credit he deserved, really? I mean, he was a very cultured player.
Good player, Dino. I have to say that because he was. I roomed with him for 5.5 years, and if he listens to me, he'll probably kill me. But he was a good player. He had a great left foot. Yeah, he was decent. And I had the pleasure of seeing Robert Ellery, the referee for the game, about 2 years ago at Chelsea. And I just went over and I said, "Look, you refereed." You refereed the playoff final against Notts County. And he went, "Oh, yeah, yeah." And I said, "Do you know what? You still got your first major decision wrong. Because when I tackled the Notts County guy, it wasn't a corner. Their first goal wasn't a corner.
I remember that.
It came off Notts County." And he looked at me and he said, "You can't be bothered about that." And I went, "I am. I'm really bothered. I'm still bothered about it. That's why I'm challenging you now. Why didn't you ask the linesman who was right there, who actually flagged, I think, for a goal kick?" And he said, "I'm going to move away from you." And he certainly did. And I'm glad he did.
You needed VAR in 1991. That's what you wanted.
Oh, definitely. Unbelievable.
So are you going to be at Wembley next weekend? I mean, obviously, you're going to be at Chelsea next week.
not too sure. I think so. I think the... I'm here today. I'm doing my duties at the Albion, which I love doing, the corporate work and going around to the tables. And you see so many of the old players, Guy Butters, down there. And, you know, it's just nice being around that environment.
Yeah. Actually, just before we go, you're one of your other old mates. He's actually at Wembley this weekend, isn't he?
Go on. Who's that? Go on. Surprise me.
Kilo. He's at Wembley. Yeah, he's. I was chatting to him last night. Actually, he was. It's the JPT or final or whatever it's called this week. Yeah, Checker Trade Trophy final. Sunderland and Portsmouth, and he's the Portsmouth goalkeeper coach now. So it's so good luck to him. Oh, he was a great goalkeeper, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a good. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, terrific goalkeeper. I went to Oldham, but he did well.
Okay, cheers. We're going to leave that there. You have to come back in and see us sometime.
Mate.
And thanks for that, and we'll speak to you soon.
Okay, take care.
Many thanks. Cheers.
Yeah, great stuff. That was Gary Chivers talking to AD earlier today. He seems in good form. You're listening to the Albion Raw on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. We're playing Southampton today. I cannot believe that at the end of that interview, AD, you were talking saying good luck to Portsmouth. I mean, bearing in mind who our next guest is, I think he might hang up. We're delighted to say that we are now joined by the broadcaster of the Southampton podcast, The Ugly Inside, Freddie Hunt. Freddie, can you hear me?
Hello, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, great stuff. Welcome to the Albion Roar. I understand you're in the city at the moment.
Yes, yeah. The cosmopolitan city of Brighton, some cracking pubs, and the sun shines out. So hopefully we can tip this day with 3 points from the Amex.
Yeah, good luck with that one. Now, we've got kind of a fortress. But it's a funny one. I think we're both sort of staring at the barrel of 6 points on this one. So, but before we talk about today's game, tell us about your season so far and what's the rabbit hutch done for you this season?
Well, obviously the first half of the season before Christmas, whilst Mark Hughes was here, we only thought he was only going one way, and that was obviously down to the Championship.
But, yeah, we thought he was doing a tremendous job.
The less said about his reign, the better, to be honest. But since Ralph has come, I suppose he's revolutionised the team. You know, the fan base are back on board as well. You know, we also almost sort of dreaded going to the football game every time whilst Mark Hughes is in charge, you know. Always sort of drawing or not even winning the game, you know, but Ralph has come in with some progressive football, you know, counter-attacking and actually going back to the real Southampton way that we've come to know and love over the last few years whilst we've all sort of grown up. So, you know, since Ralph's been in charge since December, he's picked up more points in his first few games than Pochettino and Koeman. So, you know, the positivity and the signs are there that we can, you know, we're almost certain that would... we feel that we can't stay up.
Is it? Is he done it basically with the same players and the same staff, or has he brought back in players that were, had previously been dropped out, or, you know, how's he done it?
Ralph didn't actually have any budget at all to bring anything in January, and we were in the market for a player or two, but it didn't work out because prices are inflated. But Ralph's basically working with what we've got so far, and he's getting the best out of them. You know, we always knew that the likes of sort of Nathan Redmond and James Ward-Prowse, for example, had talent, had potential, and it looks like he's squeezing the best out of them. You know, Redmond actually he had a good start to the season. Getting involved in most of the play, involved, I suppose, in an assist or so before, whilst Mark Hughes was here, but he's gone to another level, where he's gone to another sort of stratosphere whilst Ralph has been here. He's getting the best out of Redmond and James Ward-Prowse as well, you know, absolutely deserved his England call-up. A bit of an insult, if you like it, if he was called up to the second team, but James Ward-Prowse getting on the score sheet as well. You know, we knew he had it in him as well, scoring some wonderful free kicks, getting on the score sheet from open play. You know, we've given him a criticism over the years that he doesn't score from open play, but I think right now Ward-Prowse and Redmond are the first two names on the team sheet.
Sure. And now, obviously, we can't not talk about the fact that we've actually got to the rarefied summit of the semi-final of the FA Cup. Now, your FA Cup travails were kind of interesting this season, and a kind of a cautionary tale to us, because twice against Derby, you were 2-0 up, and it didn't really happen for you, and we played Derby in the next round. I mean, it's the cautionary tale was, well, Millwall were 2-0 up on us. So, you know, do you feel that actually yours is also a team that can close a game out? Because against Derby, you proved that actually wasn't really the case.
Well, the Derby games were almost, a repeat episode of what's happened previously this season. I think up until, the last round of fixtures against Tottenham, we'd failed to win a game from a winning from a losing position. We've also got, I think, with the team with the highest amount of points lost from winning positions this season. So, you know, prime example against you guys back in September, we were 2-0 up. And then you guys sort of took a point away from St. Mary's. So that was a real sucker punch that day. But Ralph has really sort of installed into the team the belief and actually the drive to see out a game. You know, we've actually seen the personality, the character from the team a couple of weeks ago to come from behind, to beat Tottenham, nearly expected it. But my God, what a feeling it was to take 3 points from a losing position. We haven't seen it in such a long time.
Absolutely. So looking forward to this game, like I say, you're sampling the finest products of this fair city, and you're heading over to Farmer later. How do you see the game going?
Well, I think as we spoke on our show, you know, earlier on the week, I think it's a must-not-lose game. I'll be happy to take a point today, but, you know, if we can take a 3 points, even better. Great, we close the gap. We then suddenly finish on the same points this afternoon. If we manage to win by 3 goals, we overtake you guys in goal difference. But again, you've also got Chelsea to play on Wednesday, so it's all to play for in the next round of fixtures. If we take 3 points, amazing. You know, considering the last 3 games actually we've played in the Premier League have all been draws, so perhaps that's the easy or the most favourable result this afternoon. A point, we wouldn't be unhappy with a point, but 3 points would be over the moon.
Sure. So, it's how do you think that the Rabbit Hutch will approach this game? I mean, bearing in mind that we've got a reasonable record at home, and as you say, Southampton can be sort of a team who falls away a bit during a game. So, I mean, as much as you want, or you know, could do with a not lose game, do you honestly believe that this is something that you could do, or is he going to approach it like it's an away game?
I think it'll be a cautionary tale this afternoon. Obviously, you know, sometimes you guys have a good home record. Like I think Chris, like you said the other day, Chris, you're going to be going out to win the game because of your home support, and it'd be important for you to win it. But so we'll be there with a bit. Playing a little bit of caution to the wind. You know, we'll play on the break, use the width of the Amex, say Redmond out wide, and perhaps if Shane Long gets on, but also look out for the secret weapon of Josh Sims. He came off the bench against Tottenham Hotspur, you know, and actually picked up the man of the match, played 45 minutes. So look out for the pace and the break. So with Nathan Redmond, Josh Sims potentially, and maybe even, Shane Long has been ruled out, so perhaps there is a, you know.
Hi, Freddie. It's AD here. Hasenhüttl, he's really, really big into he's trusting the youth players to come through, and he's giving them an opportunity to show what they can do, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what we've missed so much over the last sort of 3 managers or so. we haven't seen anybody sort of really break through, given a chance over a senior player under Hughes, under Pellegrino. And, you know, Puel, to an extent, didn't play too much of the youth system, despite him fitting the criteria as a Southampton manager bringing through the youth. But this season, we've seen more emergence and more chances from the younger players. Yeah, because, I mean, in particular...
Because you were talking about the Southampton way, which is a phrase, I suppose. But I mean, your academy has always been very, very strong, and you have and the way that you've done things is to like progress these players, like the likes of Walcott, Wayne, not Wayne Bridge. Wayne Bridge, yeah.
Gareth Bale went through that. Matt Letizia never left anyway, but is it kind of dried up a little bit over the recent years? Is it not?
I mean, to an extent, you could say that. And I suppose this is the first season we've really seen the opportunity given to the youngsters. Perhaps, I mean, you go back a couple of seasons ago, Ronald Koeman didn't favour the younger players because he thought they weren't good enough. But it is basically the same crop of players from 2 years ago. You know, we've seen Sam Gallagher back in the first team this season. We've seen him emerge with a couple of extra players, if you like, in Jake Hesketh, who's currently out on loan, but he's got a big potential. But Jan Valery is another name actually on the first team who's actually overtaken the I suppose the first team spot from Cedric, who's since been shipped out. So, you know, there is faith, there is belief in the players, you know, and ultimately that's all the players need from the manager, from the coach, you know, to believe that they're good enough. If they're old enough, they're good enough. That's sure. The old phrase, isn't it, you know?
Absolutely.
And it's wonderful to see they've actually gone back to our roots and gone back to our system.
Okay, so after today's game, win, lose or draw, I mean, it's kind of guns to your head. Do you think Southampton will be a Premier League side next season?
Absolutely. 100%. And I think the reason why we say that...
It's because we all hate Colin Warnock.
well, I mean, ultimately what it was last season, we were banking on there to be three worse teams than us. And we got away with it to an extent. The Swansea game was a cup final. We managed to stay up by the skin of our teeth. But this season, we've got a favourable run in. And actually, we believe in the manager. We believe in the process. And we believe in the system that he's employed. And the last season under Pellegrino and Mark Hughes, we didn't have too much faith at all. And, you know, when we were up 2-0 against Chelsea, when we had to lose 3-2, we thought that was it. That was nowhere back. But this season, there's a totally different mood. And Ralph has revolutionised the club from top to bottom, from the fan base right the way up to the boards.
Okay, listen, we've got to leave it there, Freddie. Listen, thanks very much indeed for joining us on the Albion Raw. Enjoy this brilliant city. I hope you don't enjoy this afternoon, but then we do enjoy this evening. I hope we'll catch up with you. But thanks a lot for coming on the Raw.
Great stuff. Speak to you later, guys.
Soon. Cheers.
That was Freddie from the Ugly Inside there. Now, Kieran, he was talking about bringing youth players through, which is something which we would probably like to do a little bit more ourselves.
Certainly, and I think that the club has put the foundations in place by building an infrastructure and having a system which is going to get that production line going. We've already seen some of the youth players getting as far as on the bench and... FA Cup matches as well. So I think in the long term we will see it. I think people just have to be patient with regards to this and have a bit of faith in the club.
Have you seen anything in our youth setup that excites you, that there is someone that is going to like step up?
Living where I do in Manchester, I don't get to see the youth team play, but certainly reading the reports on North Stand chat and so on, it's clear that the likes of Connolly, who is held in incredibly high regard, my understanding is that he's going to play 90 minutes at the Albion in a match, and after that he goes to Luton. Now, he could be in this unusual position that he'll go to Luton and they've already been promoted, so therefore they might give him plenty of game time, which could be a benefit for all concerned.
It did seem like a bit of a strange loan, that one.
Well, no, he was injured for a lot of
exactly,
that's the point.
Because I think they probably thought he was going to be fit a lot sooner than he actually was.
And it's not the first time he's been injured, just at the wrong time as well, is it?
Well, yeah, exactly, because he was in with a chance of being in the first team squad last season, of course.
Well, he's been on the bench. I think he did actually get on, wasn't it for the Southampton game? Only the last 2 minutes, but for the Southampton game, you know, in the League Cup earlier this season.
Yeah. Well, Ireland certainly need a new striker as well. So, I mean...
He's the 21 skipper, isn't he? No, sorry, that's Malumbi, isn't it? Yes, he's one of ours.
But I don't know if he's the great white hope or anything like that, but, I mean, it's... he's certainly one that we would like like to see a lot more.
We've also got Gyökeres has played in the first team. I mean, he had a very good game when he came on against West Brom in the first game, and he was, you know, Keaton had enough faith in him to start him in the replay, and he didn't quite pull up the trees in the same way. But the point is you're not, you know, you can't criticise a fella for that in his, what is his second senior game. But, you know, bit by bit by bit. And I mean, again, we've talked about it on previous shows, it's incremental steps. You know, we're not going to take the massive leaps. They're going to do it knowing full well that they are covered. So if Gyökeres can start and it's not quite happening, and then we've got someone else to cover him. And I think that seems to be almost clear in the way the club is run generally, isn't it?
Yeah, there's very much a pyramid structure, and they are looking. It's a very analytical approach taken by the club with regards to building for the future, and they'll be identifying which players are out of contract in the first team in 2 or 3 years' time, and also identifying where the opportunities will potentially lie, both within the club, ideally, because that's going to save you £10 or £15 million pounds in terms of a transfer fee, and externally as well.
And I mean, we don't want to go into too many details, but does the B word come into it as well?
Which one?
The Brexit.
Oh, right.
Brexit is an issue in terms of the recruitment of players, because if we fall to the standard non-Brexit rules, the first thing that's going to happen is that you won't be able to recruit players at the age of 16. You're going to have to wait until they're 18. And there are implications in terms of the number of international caps and FIFA rankings and things of that nature. So it's going to hit a club such as the Albion and the other non-large clubs in the Premier League far greater than it will hit the Big Six.
Because, I mean, a lot of the recruitment for the in development squad is actually from the EU, isn't it? So, I mean, you're going to have issues with work permits and whatever else. I mean, it's a minefield. I don't want to talk about it.
But
I
think you brought it up.
I know. So, Kieran, I mean, let's just briefly talk. This week, you've got to spend some time with Liam Rossini, and you learned quite a lot.
I was fortunate enough to appear on EFL Matters for Sky Sports on Thursday night, and Liam was one of the guests there. The show's hosted by David Prutton, and I was introduced to him in the canteen beforehand. And he's a really smart guy, but his approach from a coaching perspective is absolutely amazing. I probably learned more sitting with Liam and just listening to him for 20 minutes than I have throughout my life in football. He will look at a scenario and explain to you in layman's terms exactly what the implications are and how the coaches will teach the players to identify opportunities to make use of space to close down, and also some of the shortfalls to the money ball system which does exist with certain sectors of the football community.
Absolutely. Well, that's it. We're going to leave that there. That's all we've actually got time for this week's Albion Raw. So thank you all very much for listening. Thank you to Kieran Maguire. Thank you to Alan West. Thank you to Freddie from The Ugly Insight. And thank you, of course, to Gary Chivers. And where did you have breakfast again this morning, Kieran?
I had breakfast at Tiffany's in Brighton.
Of course you did. We'll see you next week. Thanks a lot. Bye. We've got nothing in common. No common ground to start from, and we're falling apart. You'll say the world has come between us, our lives have come between us. Still, I know you just don't care. And I said, what about breakfast at Tiffany? She said, I think I remember.